Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
Alabama wins!
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a week one edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. And have we got a treat for you? We have Sam Doughton on board tonight. Sam is a staff writer for GoBlueRaiders.com. He works within the MTSU athletic department, and he's certainly a treat tonight, teeing us up the ins and outs of MTSU, their roster, their coaching staff. And really, I think there's some interesting matchups that as Alabama fans will get to watch on Saturday, and Sam really helps us sort of understand those and pick through those in what ends up being just a really good conversation. So jump in, and we'll pass the ball to the interview. Go. All right, welcome back, Alabama fans, and have we got a treat for you. We have the Sam Doughton with the MTSU Athletic Department, writer for GoBlueRaiders.com. Sam, thanks for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Dave. Pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. Man, we survived another offseason, and here we are kicking off in just a handful of days. Like, we're all super excited about this, right?
Oh, I'm super pumped. You know, I've been counting down the days till September 2nd personally. You know, camp is such a grind when you're out there day to day, and I'm not even out in the heat like the players are most days. I just get to come in right at the end and do some interviews. But very exciting times, and I know – everyone's just got a lot of anxious energy. They're ready to get off. And I think for people like me and people like you that cover these teams closely and watch these teams closely, you're just ready to get some answers to some questions you've had all off season. And, you know, hopefully each team will be able to answer some of those things after this weekend.
Right. Hey, talk to us about, or maybe introduce us a little bit to head coach Rick Stockstill, 18 years head coach at MTSU. So he's definitely put in some time. And back in the day, he was a quarterback for Bobby Bowden, FSU. And so some folks have maybe heard the name is familiar for, some context there. But introduce us to Coach Stockstill, runs a little bit of an air raid offense. What can Alabama fans expect from Stockstill's offense on Saturday?
Well, you know, the biggest thing with Rick Stockstill, obviously being here 18 years, is the stability he's provided the program. In that time, I think, you know, now that Pat Fitzgerald has left Northwestern, he's either the sixth or fifth longest tenured coach in all the FBS. So he's been around a really long time. And on top of that, he's kept a lot of the same coaches on his staff for a really long time. Defensive coordinator Scott Schaefer used to be the head coach at Syracuse. This is entering his seventh year on staff. He's got a bunch of former players on staff at, like, I think we have two position coaches and then another two GAs that actually played in the last MTSU Alabama game in 2015, including his son, Brent Stockstill. So he it's a real family atmosphere because of that, because he's been around so long, he's been able to bring back his own guys and sort of fill holes in his staff as guys move on and guys move up. And so that's really exciting. It's interesting to be a part of, and it's always good for rivalry week because you have coaches that have fun stories about teams that they've played and can often pull out some good content on my end from them. But, you know, he's really somebody that stick with his offensive coordinator cook on offense. He obviously has a lot of influence with it being a former quarterback and has tended to stick around the air raid tree a lot of the times with his coordinators. And certainly he has a guy that's about as close to the the Howl Mummy trees you can get without being a member of the Mummy family. And Mitch Stewart, who was a quarterback at Valdosta State, which is, you know, where Mike Leach and Howl Mummy cut their teeth coming up. Yep. And so definitely a part of that tree. You know, it doesn't run in as pure as a Mike Leach type might be, but you see the elements of it, right? You see the four wide sets, you see stuff like that. And, you know, it's an offense where Rick is going to let his quarterback cook and let the quarterback be trusted. And, you know, something they put a lot of trust in Chase Cunningham last year, and they have a lot of confidence in Nicholas Vadiato this year as a guy that can be that point guard in the offense and distribute the ball out and find open space and be successful. You know, one of my favorite things about Rick is that he is still that quarterback at FSU with the chip on his shoulder at his heart. You don't see it that often. He definitely, you know, at 18 years in, and, you know, keeps his cards close to the chest a lot of times and is, you know, figured out all the coach speak and everything. But, you know, I think he saw it when Middle Tennessee upset Miami last year and got that big win. You know, he would have been excited about any Power 5 win, obviously, but I think he was extra excited that he got to knock off his old rival in the Hurricanes.
You know, that was a big one. I was going to ask, what's the temperature you think of the fan base? You know, 8-5 last year, a win in the Hawaii Bowl. That's going to be a good place to go in December and January. And then the win over the Miami Hurricanes. MTSU's got to be looking forward to playing another Kevin Steele defense, right?
They are excited about that. I mean, I think the general temperature of the fan base is they are, you know, things are more optimistic than they were when I got here. When I started here in 2021, they had just come off of two losing seasons, one of which was the COVID year in 2020, which, you know, lots of weird things happened. They had to prepare for Army on, I think, 4 days' notice at one point in that season and some other stuff. But, you know, one thing about Rick is, you know, Rick Stockstill's been here a very long time, but that's not come with maybe the conference championships that one might expect necessarily. He's won a share of a conference title a couple times in the Sun Belt, has a conference USA East Division title under his belt. But, you know, there's definitely an element of the fan base that wants the team to take that next step this year. Now that Conference USA has a new look, has four new teams, you know, a new 9-team conference. They want Middle to be in that conversation now that some of those teams have moved on. And there's some hope that this could be the year where they take that next step up and get in that championship conversation. But there's a lot of football to be played before we have any answers on that front. So he's somebody that runs a super clean program. That's one of the reasons he stuck around for so long is there's almost never any off-field stuff or academic stuff that causes any serious problems with anything. That was one of the big issues of the program when they came in is that our university president, Sidney A. McPhee, was one of the presidents on the NCAA board that started the academic progress rate, better known as APR. Yep. To measure the academic progress rate. And then, you know, the first year of APR scores coming out, Middle Tennessee was dead last in APR in the entire country. So when Coach Stockstill was hired, that was a big point of emphasis is to get those APR up. And they've been at near the top of APR in all of FBS since then. And so it's, you know, that's a huge credit that you can't say that about every program, honestly, right, in this day and age. And but it's something that Middle takes a lot of pride in, and you know, being a member of the athletic department, something that, you know, I have a lot of pride in. That it's not just true football, but almost all of our programs here, that's, you know, the goal for everybody, and they do a pretty good job of that.
That's fantastic. You know, going into the game Saturday, one distinct advantage MTSU has is knowing who the starting quarterback is. Alabama's not sure, and we may play several. But talk to us about Nicholas Vadiato. He started a little bit last year, a little bit the year before, and due to injury, there's been some movement there. But it's his team this year. Talk about what his style of play and maybe what Blue Raider fans expect from him.
Well, you know, Nicholas is such a fantastic college football story, Dave. You know, he came in, you know, he was a COVID year recruit. You know, I talked to him last week about what his recruiting process was like. He's like, well, I was on a lot of Zoom calls like you and I are right now, and, you know, having to Zoom with Coach Stockstill in my, you know, kitchen with my mom and talk to him about that, and having our linebacker coach, you know, go on a FaceTime tour of campus and walk around and show the buildings. But built up a good relationship with the coaches that way, and, you know, came in as a pocket passer. I was expected to redshirt as a freshman, but Some extenuating circumstances happened that year. The initial starting quarterback was an NC State transfer named Bailey Hockman. He left the team after the third game due to personal reasons. So Chase Cunningham, who was sort of a former walk-on, got to step into starting role, did well with that, and then Chase tore his ACL in, I think, the eighth game of the season. So the ninth game of the season, they were down to two scholarship quarterbacks, and they thought they had a better shot with Nick at the helm as the starter, so he got the nod after a little mini competition in week nine or whatever that was, and had the keys the rest of the way, ended up winning going three and two in those starts, and including a bowl win and a bowl MVP performance. Really an incredible step up for a true freshman, and particularly, after he threw five interceptions in his first career start against Middle's biggest rival, which is Western Kentucky, and, earned a lot of respect from a lot of different people around the program with his, his guts, his poise, and his improvement over that 2021 season. And then, entering 2022, he was in an open competition for the quarterback spot. Chase ended up coming back from injury and beating him out. So the goal for him at that point was to get his red shirt back. And they were able to do that just by the skin of his teeth. Chase ended up having to miss a game because due to a concussion late in the season. But Nick came in and won his only start that year against Charlotte. Nice. So, he's somebody that for a first year starter, as like being the guy, has a lot of experience for a first year starter.
Right.
But, one thing Rick Stock still points out all the time is, he's only really played in six games total in his college career, if he had everything up. So he's still relatively inexperienced, but the flashes we've seen from him in those games, he's very much a pass first guy. He's somebody that's going to stand tall in the pocket and make accurate throws downfield, has a strong enough arm to make throws, down the field. But is, best known for his decision-making, right? He's going to get the ball in the right spot.
Nice.
He's got a quick release to get the ball out, and it's just a good fit for what they want the quarterback to do in Mitch Stewart's scheme. And, that's why he's pretty much had the job since the spring. His second year in the offense, he's got a lot of familiarity with it and had a tough competition against a guy that put up some good numbers last year in Chase Cunningham. So guy to have a lot of confidence in. Guy was voted the team captain as redshirt sophomore, which you don't hear about all the time either. So definitely, good head on his shoulders, wise beyond his years, all those cliches, true of Nick all the time. And somebody I'm excited to see what he does when he doesn't have to worry about injuries or worry about, guys coming back. What can he do knowing that he's the guy all summer, all August? And, results in the scrimmages have been pretty good so far.
Talk about his targets. A couple of transfers or graduating seniors, and so it's there's certainly some returning players, but a little bit of turnover maybe across the receiving core. Who are some of the primary targets Alabama fans should look for on Saturday?
Oh, this is easily the position group that I think's had the most turnover this year, and that's in part because Middle plays four wide receivers traditionally. But, you mentioned Jalen Lane, who was the leading receiver last year. He's now a Virginia Tech Hokie. That's where he transferred to this offseason. And then, the two other top targets, Yusuf Ali and Isaiah Gaythings, both graduated. So you really only have DJ England Chisholm back that was in that starting rotation. And, he is speed. That is the easiest thing to talk about them. 5'8", 152. Playing on the outside, that doesn't make sense at first glance. So then you see him run past defensive backs, and you're like, oh, that's why he's playing on the outside, is because he has that game-breaking speed. And, he got to show off that game-breaking speed against Miami last year. I believe he had two catches for 169 yards and two touchdowns against the Hurricane, including a 98-yard touchdown. So he's got you've got to stay in front of him.
Yeah.
And that is – easier said than done,
right?
But
right.
But because of that speed and the attention you have to pay to it, even when he's not getting targeted necessarily, he can open up options for other guys.
Excuse the defense towards, yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like
he's somebody that's really critical to what they want to do on offense, even when he's not necessarily getting the ball. And he's somebody that if he gets the ball, like he could be gone before you know it. So
he's a target, but if he's a decoy on some plays. Who's maybe next up to look for?
Well, one position that I've enjoyed seeing the depth of is what they call the wide receiver H on the depth chart. It's almost a tight end, almost an H-back, but more of a slot receiver. but the types of players they have playing there are usually converted tight ends or guys that are 6'4", 6'5".
Okay.
And so you're using that guy in sort of slot receiver type patterns. They're running in the flats. They're running, you know, short dig curls. They're running outs, things like that. And they just seem to be open all the time. Just, you know, against soft zones, they're the guys getting 5, 6, 7 yard gains consistently. And so they, you know, they're the check down options, whatever may have you, but often they're, you know, first looks off the snap, just getting open real quick on sort of little tiny stick routes and stuff like that. So Jeremy Tate and Holden Willis are going to be rotating in and out of that spot, you know, rotating in and out of that spot this camp. Two guys that haven't played before, you know, Tate, you know, has been the backup for two seasons now. You know, he came in last year, I think, and had Gaythings ahead of him, who's now in the Kansas City Chiefs camp. I have not checked to see if he's made it through the first round of cuts yet or not, but definitely has been enjoying catching balls from Patrick Mahomes this August. But, you know, Tate's a guy that transferred in from Memphis last year that's going to get a shot. And Holden Willis is a transfer from South Florida. I think he played mostly on the outside there and has learned the position, and you've really seen his growth a lot in camp. And then, you know, the other slot guy that's gotten a lot of attention is Elijah Metcalf, who's somebody that's been in that wide receiver rotation the past 2 years, just hasn't been in that starting role. So he's got a lot of snaps, a lot of experience. But, you know, he's now going to get a chance to run some of those more slot concepts, and has a lot of speed out of that slot position as well. Some good spectacular catchability. And then really, you know, the biggest question mark for me is the other outside receiver, you know, which, you know, right now, Javonte Sherman is the guy that had a great spring. It's a guy that they have a lot of high expectations for internally with the team. But there's been some guys, you know, chomping at his heels that are making that a difficult decision at times in camp, I think. Particularly the two Power 5 transfers that come in wide receiver room, Justin Olsen, who came from my alma mater, UNC, and Kalani Norris from Georgia Tech. You know, they had to come in the summer. They missed spring ball, finishing up classes at their old school. But they've quickly risen up the depth charts in that time as they've gotten more familiar with the scheme. And there's somebody that I think will, you know, at least have an effect in multiple games this year. I just don't know when that will come this season.
You know, that's going to be interesting. One of the running jokes that we've had, sort of our podcast with our audience, is that we'll give up big plays to the tight end with some regularity, mm-hmm. And you know, the media will ask Saban about it, and he'll say that, well, we don't run an offense or we don't run a defense that doesn't cover the tight end, except for sometimes it looks like we do. And so when I looked at your roster and I didn't see a tight end, I got really excited. And but we might need to get on the horn with the coaching staff and say, if they line up in the slot, treat them like a tight end and let's cover them this time. Mm-hmm. So that'll be an interesting thing to see. Talk about running back Frank Peasant. Looks like he's probably the bell cow among the backs. It's over 700 yards last year, so he was reasonably effective toting the ball. What kind of player does you know, does he look to be? And I think of, like, Alabama fans think of the sort of the style of offense, the air raid. And we think a little bit of Mike Leach, who almost never used the late Mike Leach. He almost never used his running backs. And it looked like, you know, there's a lot of sort of variations and on the theme. And it looks like MTSU does use a running back a lot. Mm-hmm. Talk about Frank and just the running back group as a whole.
Well, you know, we'll start with Frank and we'll get into the scheme a little bit later, but Frank is a power back with a capital P. He was initially recruited to Middle Tennessee. He first got on the team's radar as a linebacker. And so that he was a two-way player in high school, and they wanted to recruit him to be a linebacker here. And then I think he ran for 2,000 yards his senior year of high school, and they said, all right, we're going to put you in the running back room initially, see how you do. And you know, he had a really, you know, stacked group his freshman year here that he had to work through, but still found a way to get on his field as a true freshman. He's entering his junior year now, so I've got to see his whole career since he's been here. And, you know, he's one of those guys that you think you have him for a three-yard gain, and then he just pushes through two guys and gets that extra 2 yards and makes it a five-yard gain. And, you know, can run between the tackles really well and has that good. And one of the reasons that he plays a lot is that he's good in pass protection. They can keep him in and pick up a blitzer, and because he's got that big build. And, you know, he's somebody that can take a linebacker out of a play or at least slow him down a lot, you know, give the quarterback just that split second more to get the ball out. But, you know, one thing I will say about the running back room is it's less bell cowy than you would expect. They rotate a lot of guys in there. air raid's all just about finding space where the defense isn't. And so if the space where the defense isn't is up the middle, well, they're just going to run the ball and run for 200 yards until they stop it.
Yeah.
And so it's really, you know, the air raid's all about, you know, much like the triple option, you get, you know, the air raid wants the defense to make a decision, all right, which two areas are you going to take away? And then we're going to go attack with the area that you did.
All right.
And so you have enough options there. And once it was explained to me like that, and particularly explained it like the triple, which is something I grew up studying, made a lot more sense what they were trying to do offensively. And so, you know, there are some games where we don't run the ball a lot here at Middle, but that's just because the defense is taking that away and giving us other options. And then other times they take away the pass and we say, okay, cool. We're just going to, you know, you're going to put five in the box. Great. We'll just run it up the middle the whole time. So, you know, I'm excited to see it. This offensive line, which has some positive vibes to it, which I have not been able to say the past two seasons. And that's particularly because the running backs have looked good in August camp. So, you know, Alabama's defense may not be the best barometer of that compared to what they'll face in Conference USA. But, you know, on the other hand, if we can run a little bit against Bama, I'd feel pretty confident the rest of the season how they're going to do.
No, I think it's an interesting matchup. Sam, maybe even you wrote that the offensive line is playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And if I look at the Alabama defense, the defensive line is where I personally have the biggest question on the Alabama defense. And so it's going to be interesting if you know, you guys are fielding an improved offensive line with a stout running back, is our defense, especially the front. Well, we run more of a 3-4, but it's a base nickel, and so it's really sort of a 3-3, or sometimes a 2-4. And so if we're playing two or three defensive, you know, true defensive linemen up front, you guys may be able to get some push. And so that's going to be interesting. I think that's going to be a challenge. That's going to be an opportunity for our defensive front, for Alabama's defensive front, to really sort of prove themselves. But let's talk about the offensive line. I think you mentioned that they may be playing with a little bit of a chip. You know, unpack that a little bit.
Well, I think the storyline for the Blue Raider offense ever since I've been here has been the offensive line's struggles, more or less. And, you know, whether the perception, fair or not, externally, was that a lot of when the offense wasn't playing well, it was due to problems on the offensive line. Typically, it was the quarterback not having enough time, having to run around and not really being able to execute the plays. And then on top of that, you know, the going away from the run maybe in games when maybe they should have gone to the run a little bit more from a fan's perspective, an outsider's perspective. Now, obviously, there's a lot of extenuating circumstances to all that. They've had a lot of injuries the past couple of years in the offensive line. On top of having, you know, starting some young guys and then having those young guys transfers out, there's a guy at who was at the University of Houston last I checked. He might have moved on from there too, but he was a starting tackle when I first got here. And then the other tackle on that team played for Mississippi State last season. I think he's still there. So, you know, there's been some turnover in that room, but they finally had enough connectivity this offseason. Enough guys stuck around, enough guys were brought in. That they feel really cohesive, particularly that starting five has stayed healthy and has gotten to work together for a really long period of time and has come together as a group really nicely. It was evident from the first day of camp. That was the best I've seen them at that point in camp, nice. you know, since I've been here. So, you know, obviously positive vibes early. I felt positive vibes about, you know, players and position groups on this team that have not stayed positive through the first month of the season, just depending on who we play. But initially, I am more confident in this group than I've been in a really long time. And that's because of that connectivity and the fact that they've been together and have weathered that criticism for a long time. That's one thing they talked about a lot as a group was, you know, hearing that criticism and taking it to heart and not wanting to be the topic of conversation this year. So, you know, offensive line's kind of like a good umpire, a good referee. If they're doing their job well, you don't talk about them. And so hopefully, you know, after this week and, you know, the preseason stuff, I don't have a chance to talk about them unless I'm doing a feature on one of them at some point, because that's the biggest hope for me.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Let's flip the field and talk defense. What sort of a base alignment does MTSU run?
Oh, four down, absolutely, most of the time. They're about 50-50 whether they put three linebackers on the field or stay in a nickel with two linebackers. But they're going to have those four down defensive linemen pretty much every single play.
And it's four true defensive linemen. Alabama will play a 3-4, but we play a nickel, and so we take a player off. And you know, for years we took a linebacker off and played more of a 3-3-5. And more recently, I think we've gotten a little cute, and we'll take a defensive lineman off because we've really liked our defense, our outside linebackers, which are really defensive ends. And so we'll look like we're playing a 4-2, like a 4-2-5. But from a personnel grouping standpoint, it's a 2-4. Five. And so sometimes we're a little light on the ends, but I mean, you know, Will Anderson was one of the cats last year, and you know, pretty good.
I was going to say y'all had so much speed with those outside backers on the edge that I'm not sure it's mattered necessarily.
Well, yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. But boy, sometimes I just like having four hosses up front. Just,
there's something, you know, particularly in run defense, just, yes, you know, being able to just eat blocks sometimes with some of those bigger defensive ends, and particularly Zaylen Wood, you know, is converted defensive tackle to defensive end, who's going to be starting a left end, fits that mold for middle. And you know, middle's had a lot of success in run defense the past 2 years. You know, the takeaways, which we'll get into, gets a lot of the headlines, right? You know, and for good reason. But you know, if you look at the rush defense tends to be pretty good, and that really starts with that defensive line group, which is as deep as any in their conference. And, you know, I would put it up with plenty of Power Five teams that I've seen. You know, when I covered North Carolina, I would have taken all eight of the guys on the two deep on our roster compared to some of those guys that I covered in North Carolina. Now, when, you know, I saw five wins in 2 years I covered North Carolina.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, some of that's there, but I mean, these are guys that they can play and can play hard. And even, you know, losing their best defender from a year ago, Jordan Ferguson, it's a group that still has a lot of confidence and has only grown and taken advantage of, you know, that they're taking to heart having to make up Jordan in the aggregate and everybody just get a little bit better. And you know, really exciting group, really good size for the G5 level. I think we'll be competitive with a lot of size up front for a lot of the teams that the Alabama will face throughout the year. And just a really, really fun group to watch. I think Miami was a little shell-shocked going against them last year, much pressure they can provide. And, you know, middle's a defense that likes to blitz a lot. Scott Schaefer likes to apply pressure with blitzing, but they can apply pressure with just four, too, and that's a big help.
That's going to be, you know, again, with offensive, defensive lines, it's going to be a great matchup to watch. I think early in the game, Alabama is certainly unsettled at the quarterback position. There's going to be a push to, and sort of the discussion all offseason back to spring has been, you know, the offensive line is significantly improved. A lot of big bodies across the front, talented, deep running back room. We're going to run the ball a lot more than maybe we have the last couple of years. And so this stands to be a pretty good test. You know, right here, week one. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. You know, walk us through linebacker. I read that it's a really deep linebacker core at MTSU, and some players leaving in the secondary, but a lot of returning talent. And if you mentioned, I have to check my notes. Right, 73 takeovers over the last three seasons. Is that right? Yeah. That's averaging better than two a contest in 20. Interceptions in 22, is that right?
Yeah, that's 20 interceptions in 22 for the whole secondary.
It's better than one a game. Mm-hmm. That's pretty dang impressive. Talk about the back end that's maybe doing a lot of that work.
Well, I mean, we'll start with the linebackers, which, as you mentioned, is a room they feel has a lot of depth, and you know, they're kind of fun to watch in the scrimmages I've got to see, and if you watch closely during the games, because you know, it's almost like hockey line shifts. You know, they'll have, you know, two guys run off as two guys run on at the same time. And, you know, they do that to keep them fresh because they are often having to carry a lot of the load with either blitz packages or in coverage. And particularly if they're in the base nickel, they're doing a lot all at the same time. But they've got a lot of guys that have been around the program a long time that have grown up together. And so there's a real sense of camaraderie in that room. You know, you don't see, you know, the spikes in numbers, and that's just more because the style of the defense that the Middle Tennessee runs, they're not going to rely on the linebackers to get the lion's share of tackles. It's going to be a lot of safety tackles, you know, safeties creeping up to help with the run and, you know, getting those tackles in the secondary, because often linebackers are blitzing on plays. But it's a very talented group, and it's a group that I think, you know, teams might take lightly just because they don't get as much publicity, but it's a group that can hurt you if you're not careful. And then, you know, as you mentioned, the secondary, you know, this defense's motto is get the dang ball back, to put it politely.
Right.
And they spend the first 15 to 20 minutes of practice doing their sort after they're done stretching. The defense just does a turnover circuit for that whole time where they're going through, you know, an interception station, and they'll do like a strip station. They'll do a strip sack area, a strip tackle. And, you know, I mean, they spend a ton of time on it, and clearly the muscle memory's clicked for a lot of these guys. Cause I mean, it's sometimes like, When there's a pass in the area, it's almost like, you know, if you've ever played Madden or NCAA football and you click on a guy and you hit that little triangle on my PlayStation to pick it off, it's click on and like that. I mean, it's really, really quick. And they've had, you know, an opportunistic defense that takes advantage of that. And, you know, part of that starts up front with the pressure. And, you know, the pressure can cause, force some bad throws and let them take advantage of it. But that's really where the secondary makes its bread and butter, is getting those turnovers. But because the defense is a little opportunistic, and, you know, some might say likes to gamble a little bit, that has historically left them exposed on the back end at times. They tend to give up a fair amount of passing yards in games. And when it goes really poorly, they give up a lot of yards over the top.
Okay.
So that has been a big point of emphasis for the secondary this year, and in camp has been limiting the plays over the top. You know, we can live with the 10-yard, the 15-yard gain, as long as you don't let them get behind you on some of these plays. And they've done better with that in camp. But, you know, I think Alabama's speed will be a little different on average than their teammates' speed has been in camp. So we'll see how that goes long term. Early signs are good. But, I mean, really that turnover focus has been, you know, it was something I keyed in on early when I started here, and, you know, has – you know, now I look like, you know, a seer or whatever, you know, because I was writing about it before we led the league in it, led the country in it in 2021, and tied for second last year in 2022 in total turnovers. So a big point of emphasis, and something that they take a lot of pride in. And, you know, they'll be tested, but they can make those opportunities happen. So you got to be safe and secure. And from what I've read on Tommy Reese, that's his name of the game as an offensive coordinator, is ball security. So it'll be an interesting matchup on Saturday for sure.
It will be. It will be. I was looking, you know, again, just sort of catching up. Is it the Tommy West that is the defensive line coach?
That is correct. So Rick Stockstill was on Coach West's staff at Clemson when Tommy West was the head coach there.
Okay.
So that's sort of that connection there. And then, you know, when Rick was hired here, Tommy West was still the head coach at Memphis.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that coach, he left Memphis in 2009 or so, if I remember correctly. And then, you know, a couple years after that, you know, he's joined the staff here. And I'm trying to think of, he's at least one of four former head coaches we have on staff.
Wow.
Including because Coach Stewart, Mitch Stewart, who's the head coach at Murray State, and Scott Schaefer's obviously the head coach at Syracuse. And then Tommy West at Clemson and Memphis. And I think at least one more that I don't remember off the top of my head. But those were the two big ones. But yeah, Rick was hired from South Carolina initially. He was on Lou Holtz's last staff and Steve Spurrier's first staff. So I guess he was one of the coaches that Coach Spurrier held over there. But, you know, he cut his teeth in South Carolina, so to speak, on Tommy West's Clemson staffs back in the 90s.
Okay.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Sam, let me get you out of here on, I don't know if this is an easy question or a hard question. Come Saturday, if MTSU is able to bottle up some of that Miami magic from last year, what has to go well? What's one or two things that maybe have to have happened to get late in the game and that prospect, be real?
Well, I think if you look at the Miami game and you go back and watch, one of those condensed games on YouTube or whatever, you'll get a pretty good formula for how to any team can upset any Power Five team, really. Miami turned the ball over, I think, on all three of their first drives, resulting in 17 points for Middle Tennessee off of those drives. So for Middle Tennessee against Alabama, it'd be something like, Jalen Milroe starts and, there's a lot of pressure on him and he makes some poor decisions and turns the ball over and Middle gets some short fields and is able to convert on those short fields where he maybe even runs one back on those situations and gets on the front foot early. And then, once teams are forced to pass the ball when they're down a little bit, then Middle can use the air raid to sort of go that, air raid's a clock control offense, really, if you look at it sometimes. There's some tempo to it.
Sure.
But it's really a ball control offense. The goal is not to turn the ball over, just keep the ball with you and keep it out of the other offense's hands. And, you saw against Miami where they were able to string out some really long drives to stretch that game out. And that's only going to be easier this year with some of those changes to the first down rules and stuff like that, where the clock doesn't stop except for the last 2 minutes of each half. So really the key is going to be getting some early turnovers and turning those turnovers into points and then being able to control the clock. As the game goes on, I think the biggest difference is that I suspect Alabama will be able to adjust a little bit quicker to what Middle is doing well than the Miami was able to last year. Miami, hearing from some of the players after the game, if I remember correctly, kind of took the week off of preparation for that. And
right.
That's traditionally not a problem for most teams in week one and certainly not for Alabama. So I don't think that's going to be in Middle's favor necessarily this year. But if things go well for Middle, it's going to be starting with those turnovers and getting some pressure to whomever starts for Alabama early at quarterback and forcing them into some poor decisions and getting the ball back.
Yeah, I think I say this a lot about offensive line play. If you're going to if someone's going to hold, someone's going to hold. But not everyone gets to do that. Not everyone gets one. And so I think an Alabama quarterback – is going to have an ugly turnover. It's going to be part of the growing pains. We're not exactly sure how the quarterback room is going to sort of play out. But the trick is not everyone gets one. we can't be giving away three or four of these things. I predict one or two, but we got to be careful. We got to be careful even getting up to two. And you're right, that quickly becomes a recipe, especially with an opportune, secondary opportune defense, like you talked about. That's going to be an interesting matchup. There's several, as we talk through this and understand the team a little bit better. There's several, I think, quite interesting matchups that both teams are going to learn about themselves as well as each other on the field on Saturday. What's the future for MTSU? There's a lot of construction on campus, a lot of excitement. Talk about sort of, where you see the program, the athletic department going as a whole.
Well, Middle Tennessee was one of the five schools of – when I joined the athletic department in 2021, there were 14 teams in Conference USA. Of those 14, five still remain, including Middle Tennessee. So there's been a real, point of emphasis since that happened, really, you know, my whole first year here of all that change and turmoil. Three teams left for the Sun Belt that year, and then we had another six that left for the American last year after staying on through sort of transition year. There's been a point of emphasis to sort of raise the standard on campus, and that started with the Build Blue project. They've just broken ground and demoed the site for the $65 million Student Athlete Performance Center, which is going to house a new weight room, football locker room, football coaches' offices, you know, physical therapy, training room, equipment room, all that stuff will be housed in there. And we'll have some sort of game day centers in the end zone there that has a lot of people really excited. And then there's a couple of phases beyond that. There's some plans for some renovations in the basketball arena, as well as an indoor practice facility, which is something that the Middle Tennessee does not have, that is really needed to help keep practices going, and not just for football, but for all the sports that we have here in Middle. One of the things I love the most about working for the athletic department is it is an athletic department that cares about all of its varsity sports and wants all of its varsity sports to be successful. That was one of the things I loved about covering sports when I was an undergrad at Carolina, was how much that university cared about making sure that all of its sports were successful. It's certainly true of Alabama. I got to experience firsthand this summer when Middle Tennessee went to the NCAA tournament in softball at the Tuscaloosa Regional, and I got to see that firsthand, just that incredible atmosphere and fan base there. And so one thing I always try to encourage to any time I go on one of these podcasts or another fan base is to find an Olympic sport team for your school that you can be really passionate about.
Yeah.
Because I think that enhances your fandom so much to have one of those teams that maybe doesn't get, you know, the press, that doesn't have, you know, the newspaper inches and the TV segments, and to get invested in their success and get invested in what they're doing. You know, I found that with the volleyball team at UNC and, you know, a place like Alabama, it's really easy to find teams like that you can invest in.
Right.
And so that's something I encourage all your listeners to do. It's something that one of my favorite parts about Middle is I get to cover all those teams in addition to the football and the men's basketball and the women's basketball and some of those, you know, sports that get those headlines.
Yeah.
Is I get to, you know, go work stats at a soccer game, which is what I'm doing on Thursday. Right. And what I'll do on Sunday after we get back from Tuscaloosa.
Right.
And being a part of an athletic department, you know, is, you know, that's one of the fun parts about my job. And I think, you know, as a fan, it's so much more fun to be a fan of, you know, very specific programs and have sort of that sense of community, because it's a little bit smaller, it's a little bit more intimate. And, you know, one great thing about schools like Alabama and UNC and Middle Tennessee, to some extent, given the size of our student population, is you can make a big school feel really small.
Yeah.
And you can make a big athletic department feel really small by rooting on one of those teams and getting involved in them. And it you know, so it's something that I enjoy, and that's one thing the Student Athlete Performance Center is going to help all the teams here, not just the football program. And, you know, it's cliche to say, you know, and I sound like, you know, one of our athletic administrators is trying to get a donation for it, for sure. But, you know, it's very true that those things impact every student athlete on campus. And, you know, while, you know, everybody knows the football is, you know, the front door for everything, but it helps everybody out, and getting to be involved with those programs really is a gift that gives back tenfold, in my opinion.
That's awesome. That is a tremendous recommendation. That's a tremendous piece of advice. I appreciate you sharing, you know, that, you know, Sam, we talked about just before we got on the air, I'm from the Nashville area. And so I'm a big fan of Middle. I'll dial that down on Saturday, because, you know, it's how that works. But, you know, overall, definitely a big supporter of Middle Tennessee, and, you know, just kind of being from the area. And so look forward to a good game on Saturday, and certainly, you know, cheering you guys on the remainder of the season. Sam, so appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Dave, you reminded me of just one more thing that you mentioned, you know, being a fan of Middle, you know, because of your family connection. And Rick Stockstill actually has a family connection to Alabama. His daughter Emily went to Alabama and worked in the recruiting office for the football team when she was there.
Ah.
So we talked a little bit about with him today at his presser, and, you know, he gave a nice answer about, you know, how much, you know, how all the great experiences Emily had and everything as a part of that. And you're getting to go to, you know, SEC championships and college football playoffs. And,
right,
you know,
right.
You know, Rick talked about how, you know, she go to the SEC championship game and then come to Middle's bowl game and then go to the, you know, New Year's Day bowl game that Alabama was in. and you know how fun that was for her. But you know, he ended it with, you know, she's going to have a great time seeing her friends, you know, and rekindling friendships with her friends that still work at Alabama. I just hope that she roots for her dad and brother at the end of the day. So a fun little family connection there that I don't think most people are going to be aware of, but
that's,
you know,
awesome.
I suspect the SEC Network might bring it up at some point during the broadcast, but if you listen to this podcast, you will know before everyone else does about that.
That's connection. Awesome. See, that's fun stuff. I appreciate you sharing that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Sam, thanks so much. We so appreciate having you on, and enjoyed learning about Middle and the inside scoop there. I love that.
Oh, I had such a fun time, Dave. Please have me back anytime. Hopefully, you know, we can schedule this game, or, you know, the powers that be above me can schedule this game soon. And as you know, I love chopping it up with you guys. I don't get to do it all the time, given where Middle is, but it's exciting every time that I get to do it. But looking forward to it, and looking forward to seeing how things work out the rest of the season.
Absolutely. We'll do it. And we're back. What'd I say? That was a pretty good interview. Sam's a lot of fun, and it was certainly fun to learn about MTSU, the opponent this Saturday. Again, this is why we love these interviews, because we get to spend time with folks who know these teams, they're passionate about these teams, and they carry that excitement into the conversation, and they share their experience with their team. And it really sort of personalizes the game in a way that we otherwise might not would get. It would be an anonymous team, anonymous players, and this sort of peels back the covers on that a little bit. Over the last couple of years that we've been doing these interviews, I've enjoyed them more and more, and really appreciate the perspective of the opponent in ways that maybe otherwise would not have. And so hopefully that comes across in the interview, the excitement that certainly that I have, and that the opponent has, and Sam certainly brought a lot of energy to the conversation tonight. Looking forward to the game this coming Saturday. Should be a good one. I think there's a lot of matchups that are going to be interesting to see. Alabama quarterback situation certainly figuring itself out. MTSU is known for a stout up front against the run, and certainly turnovers. And those are opportunities that if Alabama's not on their P's and Q's, we can really struggle there. I don't know that it jeopardizes losing the game, but Alabama can look really bad and really exit the game, even having won, looking very, very bad, and just let the negative press unfold going into Texas. So it'd be really good to have a good showing, build up the confidence for the team, and certainly where there's going to be some competitive matchups, we'd like to see Alabama cleanly win those matchups. But we don't know how that's going to unfold, and it's an oblong ball, and so it's going to be fun to see how that certainly unpacks itself. But it was a great interview. Again, we enjoyed having Sam on, and a lot of fun. We look forward to continuing these interviews through the most of the season, through the full season. I think there's a couple of three teams we don't yet have someone lined up, and we're looking to wrap that up as we continue forward in the season. All right, that'll wrap up tonight's show. What do? You know, Roll Tide. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course, Roll Tide.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.